The Sanskrit word maha has three meanings. 1. Great. 2. Many. And 3. Victorious. As an elder, one is respected by many kings and great ministers. Having studied the sutras in the Tripitaka, an elder has victoriously transcended all non-Buddhist religions. Madgalyayana is Sanskrit and means descendant of a family of bean gatherers. His name also means turnip root, because his ancestors ate turnips when they cultivated the way. He is also called Kolita, after the tree where his father and mother prayed to the spirit of that tree for a son. This venerable one was the foremost in spiritual penetrations. In his cultivation of the way, when he first certified to arhatship, he obtained 6 kinds of spiritual penetrations: the heavenly eye, the heavenly ear, the knowledge of others' thoughts, the knowledge of past lives, the extinction of outflows, and the complete spirit. With the heavenly eye, one sees not only the affairs of men, but every action of the gods as well. With the heavenly ear, one hears the gods speaking. With the knowledge of others' thoughts, one knows what others are thinking and planning before they speak. With the knowledge of past lives, not only does one know what they are thinking, but one clearly knows their causes and effects from former lives. As to the extinction of outflows, all people have outflows. They are like leaky bottles. Pour something in the top, and it flows out the bottom. The bigger the hole, the faster the flow. The smaller the hole, the slower the flow. If there are no holes, there are no leaks, no outflows. The extinction of outflows is the absence of leaks. What outflows do people have? Food and drink become the outflows of feces and urine. If you like to get angry, that's an outflow. If you are greedy, hateful, or stupid, you have outflows. Pride and doubt are outflows too. With outflows, nothing can be retained, but without them, all leaks disappear. Outflows are simply our faults. People, if we don't have big sicknesses, we have small sicknesses. And if we don't have small sicknesses, we have little faults. If we don't have big outflows, we have small outflows. And if we don't have small outflows, we have slow leaks, little bad habits. A lot can be said about outflows. The absence of them is called the penetration of the extinction of outflows. The penetration of the complete spirit is also called the penetration of the realm of the spirit, and the spiritual penetration of everything as you will it to be. The complete spirit means that you have an inconceivable power. Not even the ghosts and spirits can know of your 1,000 changes and 10,000 transformations, for you have penetrated all realms and states without obstruction. As you will means that everything is the way you want it. If you want to go to the heavens, you go. If you want to go down into the earth, you go. You can walk into the water without drowning, and into the fire without burning. If you're in your room and think, I'd rather not go out the door, you can walk right through the wall. How can this be? It's as you will, according to your thought. However you think you would like it to be, that's the way it is. You just have to make a wish and you attain your aim. These are the 6 spiritual penetrations. When Mahamudgalyayana first obtained these penetrations, he looked for his father and mother. Not so much his father, actually, as his mother. Where was she? She was in the hells. Why? Because she had not believed in the triple jewel, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And what is more, she had slandered them. She had also eaten fish eggs and flesh, and thereby had killed many beings. Seeing her in the hells, Madgalyayana sent her a bowl of food. She took it in one hand and hid it with the other because she was afraid the other hungry ghost would see it and try to steal it from her. Being greedy herself, she knew that other hungry ghosts were greedy too, and so she covered it over stealthily. Although it was good food, her heavy karmic obstacles prevented her from eating it. When the food reached her mouth, it turned into flaming coals which burned her lips. Madgalyayana's spiritual powers could not prevent the food from turning into fire, so he asked the Buddha to help him. The Buddha told him to save his mother by arranging an Ulambana offering. Ulambana means releasing those who are hanging upside down. The Buddha told Madgalyayana that on the 15th day of the 7th lunar month, the day of the Buddha's delight, and the monk's pravarana, he should offer all varieties of food and drink to the Sangha of the Ten Directions. In this way, he could rescue his mother so that she could leave suffering and obtain bliss. Madgalyayana followed these instructions, and his mother was reborn in the heavens. Not only was his mother saved, but all the hungry ghosts in the hells simultaneously left suffering and attained bliss. Now you might say, I don't believe that food and drink could become fire when hungry ghosts eat them. Of course you don't believe it. But the world is full of strange, strange things. It would be hard to speak about them all. How much the less can one be clear about those things beyond this world? Let's take water, for example. People and animals see water as water, but the gods see it as lapis lazuli, and the hungry ghosts see it as fire. It's all a question of individual karmic manifestations. Gods have the karmic retribution of gods, men of men, and ghosts of ghosts. This is how, with the Buddha's help, Madgalyayana saved his mother. Mahakashyapa. Again, Maha means great, many, and victorious. The Sanskrit word Kashyapa means great turtle clan, because Mahakashyapa's ancestors saw the pattern on the back of a giant turtle and used it to cultivate the way. Kashyapa also means light drinking clan, because his body shone with a light which was so bright it seemed to drink up all other lights. Why did his body shine? 7 Buddhas ago, in the time of the Buddha, Vipassana, there was a poor woman who decided to repair a ruined temple. The roof of the temple had blown off, and the images inside were exposed to the wind and rain. The woman went everywhere and asked for help, and when she had collected enough money, she commissioned a goldsmith to regild the images. By the time he was finished, the goldsmith fell in love with her and said, "You have attained great merit from this work, but we should share it. You may supply the gold, and I will furnish the labor free." So the temple was rebuilt and the images regilded. The goldsmith asked the woman to marry him, and in every life, for 91 kalpas, they were husband and wife, and their bodies shone with purple and golden light. Mahakashapa was born in India, in Magadha. When he was 20, his father and mother wanted him to marry, but he said, "The woman I marry must shine with golden light. Unless you find such a woman, I won't marry." Eventually, they found one, and they were married. As a result of their good karma, their bodies shone with gold light, and they cultivated together and investigated the doctrines of the way. When Mahakashapa left home to become a bhikshu, his wife became a bhikshuni called Purple and Golden Light. Mahakashapa's personal name was Pipala, because his parents prayed to a spirit of a pipala tree to grant them a son. As the first patriarch, Mahakashapa holds an important position in Buddhism. When Shakyamuni Buddha spoke the Dharma, the great Brahma Heaven King presented him with a golden lotus, and Shakyamuni Buddha held up the flower before the assembly. At that time, hundreds of thousands of gods and men were present, but no one responded except Mahakashapa, who simply smiled. Then the Buddha said, "I have the right Dharma eye treasury, the wonderful nirvanic mind, the real mark which is unmarked. The Dharma door of mind-to-mind transmission has been transmitted to Kashapa." Thus, Mahakashapa received the transmission of Dharma and became the first Buddhist patriarch. Venerable Mahakashapa is still present in the world. When he left home under the Buddha, he was already 160 years old. By the time Shakyamuni Buddha had spoken Dharma for 49 years in over 300 Dharma assemblies, Kashapa was already over 200 years old. After Shakyamuni Buddha entered Nirvana, Kashapa went to southwestern China to Chickenfoot Mountain in Yunnan Province. It has been over 3,000 years since the Buddha's Nirvana, but Mahakashapa is still sitting in Samadhi in Chickenfoot Mountain waiting for Maitreya Buddha to appear in the world. At that time, he will give Maitreya the bowl which the four heavenly kings gave Shakyamuni Buddha and which Shakyamuni Buddha gave him, and his work in this world will be finished. Many cultivators travel to Chickenfoot Mountain to worship the patriarch Kashapa, and on the mountain there are always three kinds of light: Buddha light, gold light, and silver light. Those with sincere hearts can hear a big bell ringing inside the mountain. It rings by itself, and although you can't see it, you can hear it for several hundred miles. It's an inconceivable state. Mahakashapa was the foremost of the Buddha's disciples, both in ascetic practices and in age. None of the Buddha's disciples was older, and none of them endured more suffering. The term ascetic practice means making an effort, raising up one's spirits with courage and vigor. The cultivation of the 12 kinds of ascetic practices is a sign that the Buddha Dharma is being maintained, for as long as they are practiced, the Dharma will remain in the world. If they are not practiced, the Buddha Dharma will disappear. Of the 12 ascetic practices, the first two deal with clothing. 1. Wearing rag robes. One gathers unwanted cloth from garbage heaps, washes it, and sews it into a robe. There are many advantages in wearing rag robes. First of all, they decrease greed. When you wear them, your heart is peaceful and calm. They also prevent others from being greedy. If you wear fine, expensive clothes, others may become envious and may try to steal them. but no one wants to steal rag robes. So the first ascetic practice benefits you and others. Those who have left home are called tattered sons because they wear rag robes. 2. Wearing only 3 robes. One's only possessions are 3 robes, a bowl, and a sitting cloth. The first robe is the great robe, the Samgati, made of 25 strips of cloth in 108 patches, which is worn when lecturing sutras or visiting a king. The second is the outer robe, the Uttarasanga, made of 7 pieces, which is worn when bowing repentance ceremonies and worshiping the Buddha. The third is the inner robe in 5 pieces, the Atharvasaka, which is worn at all times to work in, to travel in, and to entertain guests. With only 3 robes, a bowl, and a sitting cloth, one teaches others to be content and not be greedy for a lot of possessions. 3. Always begging for food. One always takes one's bowl to beg and does not cook for oneself. 4. Begging in succession. One begs from house to house in regular order without discriminating between the rich and the poor. If by the 7th house no food is obtained, one doesn't eat on that day. One doesn't think, "I want to beg from the poor, not the rich," or "I want to beg from the rich and not the poor." Mahakashapa once said, "Poor people are to be pitied. If they don't plant blessings now, in the future, they will be even poorer." He begged exclusively from the poor. Subhuti, on the other hand, begged only from the rich. If they are rich, he reasoned, we should help them continue to plant blessings and meritorious virtue. If they don't make offerings to the triple jewel, next life they'll have no money. And so he begged only from the rich. But the Buddha scolded both of them. "You too have the hearts of arhats," he said, "because you discriminate in your begging. To beg properly, one should go from house to house without discrimination." 5. Eating only once in the middle of the day. This means that you do not eat in the morning or in the evening, but only between the hours of 11 and 12 o'clock in the morning. Some who don't understand the Buddha Dharma think that eating once in the middle of the day means simply eating only one lunch. It actually means that one doesn't eat in the morning or in the evening, but only once in the middle of the day. In China, when one receives the precepts, they ask, "Neng chi," which means, "Can you keep them?" The preceptee answers, "Neng chi," which means, "I can." If one eats in the morning, noon, and evening, however, one can answer, "Neng chi," which sounds the same but means, "I can eat." Eating once a day at noon is one of the Buddha's rules because the Buddha only responded to offerings of food at noon. Gods eat in the morning, animals eat in the afternoon, and ghosts eat at night. Those who have left home do not eat at night because when ghosts come out at night to look for food and hear the sounds of chopsticks, they run to steal the food. The food the people are eating turns into fire in the ghosts' mouths, and they get angry and take revenge by making people sick. 6. Reducing the measure of what you eat. If you can eat 3 bowls, then eat only 2.5. If you can eat 2 bowls, then eat only 1.5. always eat a little less. If you eat too much, your stomach can't hold it and you'll have to do a lot of work on the toilet. Eat less. 7. Not drinking juices after noon. After 12, you don't drink apple juice, orange juice, milk, or any kind of juice at all, how much the less bean curd broth. True ascetics don't drink juices after noon. Some people cultivate one or two of these practices, and some cultivate more. Some cultivate only one, and some cultivate all 12. It's not fixed. It depends upon how strong you are. Since cultivators can't avoid the question of clothing, food, and dwelling, these 12 ascetic practices have been established to deal with them. The five which concern dwelling are 8. Dwelling in an aranya. Aranya is a Sanskrit word which means still and quiet place. In an aranya, one is left alone and there are no distracting noises. It is said, what the eyes don't see won't cause the mouth to water. What the ears don't hear won't cause the mind to transgress. When people see food, they give rise to desire for it, and their mouths water. If your ears don't hear confusing sounds, there is no affliction in your mind. In a still, quiet place, it is easy to cultivate diligently and enter samadhi. 9. Dwelling at the foot of a tree. You live beneath a tree, but not under any one tree for more than 3 nights. After 2 nights, you move for fear that someone might come and make offerings to you. Cultivating ascetics don't like to have such dharma affinities or a lot of food and drink, and so they live under a tree. 10. Dwelling under the open sky. You don't live in a house or even under a tree, but right out in the open, meditating. 11. Dwelling in a graveyard. Living here, one is always on the alert. Look at them. They're dead. In the future, I'll be just like them. If I don't cultivate the way, what will I do when it's time to die? I'll die all muddled. Dwelling in a graveyard is a good cure for laziness. 12. Ribs not touching the mat. This means always sitting and never lying down, cultivating vigorously and not fearing suffering. These are the 5 ascetic practices which deal with dwelling. Mahakashapa cultivated not only 1 ascetic practice, but all 12 of them very thoroughly. Once, the Buddha moved over and asked him to sit beside him. The Buddha couldn't bear to see him cultivating ascetic practices at his age. Kashapa, he said, you are over 200 years old, too old for ascetic practices. Take it easy. You can't endure them. The Venerable Kashyapa smiled. He didn't say whether or not he would obey the Buddha's instructions, but he returned and continued to practice just as before. The Buddha knew this and was extremely pleased. Because within my dharma, Mahakashyapa cultivates ascetic practices, he said, the dharma will remain long in the world. He's a great asset, foremost in asceticism. The 12 ascetic practices are cultivated by those who have left the home life. I haven't left the home life, someone says. Why are you explaining them to me? This seems like a good question, but if you look into it, it's really irrelevant. Why? Perhaps you have not left home in this life, but how do you know that you did not leave home in a past life and cultivate these practices? Perhaps you have just forgotten, and so I am reminding you. Even if you did not leave home in past lives, perhaps next life the opportunity will arise, and the Bodhi seeds planted in this life will mature. Then, your merit and virtue will be perfected, and you will feel very comfortable practicing asceticism. Because you heard about it in this life, next life you will enjoy cultivating it. Perhaps in the past you planted good causes, and now you reap the good fruit. Or perhaps in this life you plant good causes, and in a future life will reap the good fruit. No one can say that someone will always leave home, or that someone else will always be at home, or that someone will always be a common person. Common people all have the opportunity to realize Buddhahood. In the future, these 12 ascetic practices will be of great use. Maha Katyayana. Maha has been explained. Katyayana means literary elegance. Because of all the Buddha's disciples, this venerable one was the foremost in debate. No one could out-debate him. On one occasion, a non-Buddhist who believed in annihilationism said, "Buddhists speak of the revolving wheel of the six paths of rebirth and maintain that after death one may be reborn again as a person, but this principle is incorrect. Why? If people can come back as people, why hasn't anyone ever died and then returned home or sent a letter to his family? There is no basis for such a view. When people die, they go out like a lamp and they can't be born again. Buddhists imagine that there is rebirth, but actually there is none." Mahakatyayana replied, "You've asked why those who die do not return. Before I answer, first let me ask you a question. If someone were put in jail for a crime, could he return home at his convenience?" "No," said the non-Buddhist, "of course not." Katyayana continued, "When people descend to rebirth in the hells, it's just the same and they can't return. In fact, they are even less free to leave." The non-Buddhist said, "Granted that those born in the hells cannot return, still, those born in the heavens are very free. Why has none of them ever sent a letter home informing his family of his whereabouts?" Katyayana said, "What you say has principle, but, by way of analogy, suppose someone slipped and fell into a toilet, not a flush toilet, obviously no one could fall into a flush toilet, but into a pit toilet about as big as a bedroom. Once he got out, would he decide he liked the aroma there and jump back in again?" "Heavens, no!" exclaimed the non-Buddhist. "The world of men," said Katyayana, "is just like a toilet, and birth in the heavens is like getting out. That's why no one comes back. Even if they did, there's the time difference to consider. For example, one day and night in the heaven of the 33 is equal to 100 years in the world of men. Born there, it would take a couple of days to find a place to stay and get settled, and by the time one returned on the third day, one's friends would have long been dead." Thus, Mahakatyayana's eloquence defeated non-Buddhists who were attached to the idea of annihilationism or permanence. They lost every time. Katyayana's name also means fan cord. Soon after he was born, his father died and his mother wanted to remarry. But the child was a tie, like a fan cord, which prevented her from doing so. He is also called Good Shoulders, because his shoulders were beautiful, and Victorious Thinker, because his eloquence was unobstructed. There are four kinds of unobstructed eloquence. 1. With unobstructed eloquence in Dharma, one can explain the Dharma without obstacle. 2. With unobstructed eloquence in meaning, one can explain the Dharma's limitless meanings. 3. With unobstructed eloquence in phrasing, one's rhetoric is effective. 4. With the eloquence of unobstructed delight in speech, one takes delight in explaining the Dharma. Because he had these four kinds of unobstructed eloquence, Mahakatyayana was the foremost of the Buddha's disciples in debate. Mahakaustila. Mahakaustila was Shariputra's maternal uncle. His name means big knees, because big knees ran in the family. He too was gifted in debate. In order to defeat his nephew, he went to southern India to study non-Buddhist debating theories, rushing through his meals and gulping down water, studying so hard that he didn't even take time to wash his face or cut his nails. His nails grew so long, in fact, that he was nicknamed the Long-Nailed Brahmin. Ravata. Ravata means constellation. He was named after the fourth of the 28 constellations, the house, the rabbit, and the sun, because his parents prayed to this constellation in order to have their son. Ravata also means false unity. One day he went walking. When it got dark, he was far from home and decided to spend the night in a shack beside the road. Just as he was about to fall asleep, two ghosts walked in, a big ghost and a small ghost. The big ghost was really big, with a green face, red hair, and a huge mouth with six teeth hanging like elephant's tusks from it. One look at him would have scared you to death. The little ghost was even uglier. His eyes, ears, nose, and mouth had all moved to the middle of his face. The two came in dragging a corpse and asked Ravata, "What do you think? Should we eat this corpse or not?" What they meant was, "If you tell us to eat the corpse, we'll eat you instead. If you tell us not to eat the corpse, we won't have anything to eat, and so we'll have to eat you." The ghosts were going to eat him no matter what he said. Ravata didn't say a word. The big ghost bit off the corpse's legs, and the little ghost ripped off Ravata's legs and stuck them on the corpse. Then the big ghost ate the corpse's arms, and the little ghost ripped off Ravata's arms and stuck them on the corpse. The big ghost ate the entire corpse, and the little ghost replaced its parts one by one with parts of Ravata's body. Ravata then thought, "My body has been used to repair the corpse, and so now I don't have a body." The next day, he ran screaming down the road, asking everyone he meet, "Hey, take a look. Do I have a body?" "What?" they said. The townspeople had no idea what he was talking about, but he kept pestering them until finally no one would come near him. "He's nuts," they said. Finally, Revata met two high masters. "Shramanas," he asked, "do I have a body?" The two high masters happened to be arhats. Seeing that Revata's potential for enlightenment was nearly mature and that he would soon certify to the Dharma body, they instructed him, saying, "The body is basically created by a combination of causes and conditions. When the causes and conditions separate, the body is destroyed. There is nothing that is you, and nothing that is not you." Just as they said this, Ravata was enlightened. He left home and certified to the fruit, and thus his name means false unity. Of the Buddha's disciples, he was foremost in being not upset or confused. Suddhipantaka and Mahapantaka were brothers. Suddhipantaka's name means little roadside, and his big brother's name means big roadside. In India, it is the custom for women who are about to give birth to return to their parents' home. But Mahapantaka's mother didn't want to go home, and so she waited until the last minute to leave. Consequently, her son was born on the side of the road. When the time came to give birth to her second child, she should have known better, but again she waited. It happened again, and the second child was called Little Roadside. Although born in similar circumstances, the two brothers were very different in nature. The older brother was remarkably intelligent, but the younger one was remarkably stupid. He was so stupid that he couldn't even remember half a line of verse. The Buddha had instructed 500 arhats to teach him a verse, and they took turns day and night trying to teach him. "Guard your mouth, unite your mind. With your body, don't offend. Do not annoy a single living being. Stay far away from non-beneficial bitter practices. Conduct like this can surely save the world." The three karmas of body, mouth, and mind should be pure. Do not cause others to be afflicted, and don't cultivate ascetic practices which are not in accord with the Dharma. These non-beneficial bitter practices include maintaining the morality of dogs or cows, worshipping fire, sleeping in ashes, and sleeping or sitting on beds of nails, which, of course, hurt a lot. One who cultivates virtue and, at the same time, avoids these meaningless practices can truly save the world. For many days, the 500 arhats combined their great spiritual powers trying to teach Little Roadside the verse. They taught him over and over, over and over, and he forgot it. "Recite the verse," they would say. "But I can't remember it," Little Roadside would answer. Finally, his brother scolded him. "You're good for nothing," he shouted. "You can't leave home. You're useless." And he chased him away. Little Roadside may not have had much of a memory, but he certainly had a temper. "If you won't let me leave home," he shouted, "I'll show you. I'll kill myself." He grabbed a rope, ran to the backyard, and climbed a tree, ready to hang himself. At that moment, Shakyamuni Buddha transformed himself into a tree spirit and explained the Dharma to him. "Your brother is your brother," he said, "and you are you. He says you can't leave home, but you don't have to listen. you can cultivate right here. Why should you kill yourself? That makes sense, sniffed Little Roadside. He's he and I'm me. He has no right to tell me I can't leave home. Right, said Shakyamuni Buddha. Since you can't remember half a line, I'll give you two words. Sweep clean. Remember these two words and use them to sweep your heart clean. Sweep the floor and sweep your heart free from dust. Little Roadside said, Yes, I'll sweep my heart. Sweep. What? Clean, said the Buddha. Sweep clean. Oh, yes, said Little Roadside. Clean. What was the first word again? Sweep, smiled the Buddha. Sweep clean, said Little Roadside, and he recited and swept, remembering the Buddha's instructions to sweep his heart clean. In less than a week, all of a sudden he was enlightened, understood everything very clearly, penetrated the real mark of all dharmas, and was even more intelligent than his brother. Little Roadside wasn't like us. We recite Namo Amitabha Buddha every day, but the more we recite, the more false thinking we have. If stupid people work hard and cultivate, they also can become enlightened. Don't say, I'm too stupid to understand the sutras. If you don't understand them, don't read them. It will suffice to contemplate your heart, for when you have seen it clearly, you will be enlightened. How should you contemplate your own heart? Watch for false thinking and sweep it out of your heart. Then you can be enlightened. Little Roadside, stupid as he was, became enlightened. We are all much more intelligent than he and could no doubt remember sweep clean, hearing it only once. So don't cheat yourself or take yourself lightly. Go forward bravely and study the Buddha Dharma. Were I to speak the most wonderful Dharma, unless you believe it, it would be of no use to you. But were I to speak utter nonsense, should you actually practice, it would be wonderful Dharma. If you don't practice the wonderful Dharma, it is not wonderful for you. You must always make vigorous progress. Don't fall behind or get lazy. This is most important, for if you can always make progress, the day will certainly come when you will recognize your original face. Nanda. There are three disciples with the name Nanda. Ananda, Sundarananda, and Nanda. Nanda, whose name means wholesome bliss, was a cowherd before he heard the Buddha speak and decided to leave the home life. He is to be distinguished from Ananda, the Buddha's first cousin, and Sundarananda, the Buddha's little brother. Before leaving the home life, Nanda was a cowherd. When he listened to the Buddha preach the 11 matters of tending cows, using the tending of cows as an analogy for cultivation of the way, Nanda knew that the Buddha was possessed of all knowledge, and he resolved to leave home and soon attain the fruit of arhatship. On one occasion, the Buddha instructed Nanda to preach to a group of 500 bhikshunis. Hearing him speak, they all attained arhatship. In the past, the 500 bhikshunis had been the concubine of a king. The king was a great Dharma protector, and he built a large pagoda in honor of a Buddha. The concubines believed in the Buddha and made daily offerings at the pagoda, vowing that they would in the future all obtain liberation with the king. The king was a former incarnation of Nanda. Sundarananda. Sundarananda was the Buddha's little brother. He loved his wife, Sundari, more than anything. The two of them were as if glued together, walking, standing, sitting, and lying down. They were never apart. One day, as the Buddha returned from the palace where he had gone to collect alms, he passed Sundari and Nanda, who were having lunch. When he saw the Buddha, he went out to fill his bowl. As he left, Sundari spit on the floor and said, "You may give the Buddha food, but if you don't return before that dries, you're in trouble." "Okay," said Sundarananda, and off he went. What do you think the Buddha did? Every time Sundarananda took a step forward to hand the Buddha his bowl, the Buddha moved away with his spiritual powers so that, in what seemed just like a few steps, Sundarananda suddenly found himself in the Jetta Grove, 5 miles from home. As soon as they arrived, the Buddha shaved Sundarananda's head. Sundarananda had no desire to leave the home life because he did not want to give up his wife. But the Buddha was his older brother, and so he complied. "I can cut off my hair," he thought, "but the first chance I get, I'm going to run away." As day after day went by, Sundarananda got more and more nervous. The Buddha and the Arhats were staying in the Jetta Grove, and Sundarananda had no chance to escape. One day, the Buddha and his Arhats went out for lunch and left Sundarananda to watch the door. "Today is the day," thought Sundarananda. "I'm definitely going home." Before the Buddha left, however, he had instructed Sundarananda to sweep the floor. Eager to be on his way, he went right to work, but every time he got the dust together, a gust of wind blew it all over the room. He tried closing the window, but when he closed one, the other blew open. Strange. This went on for 2 or 3 hours. "The Buddha will be back any minute," he thought. "Dust or no dust, I'm leaving." He threw the broom down and ran. "The Buddha uses the main road," he thought, "so I'll take the side road." He ran for a couple of miles when suddenly he saw the Buddha walking toward him. He hid behind a tree to wait for him to pass, moving slowly around the back of the tree so that he would not be seen. Who would have guessed that the Buddha would follow him around the tree, step by step? Sundarananda walked in one direction, and the Buddha followed him. Sundarananda reversed his steps, and so did the Buddha. A collision was inevitable. There was no place to hide. "What are you doing?" asked the Buddha. "I thought you were watching the door." "I waited and waited," said the embarrassed Sundarananda, "but you didn't return, so I came to welcome you. I thought that your bowl might be too heavy. I came to help you carry your bowl." "Wonderful," said the Buddha. "What a good little brother. Now let's go back to the Jetta Grove." The Buddha knew that Sundarananda wasn't happy, and one day he said, "Sundarananda, come with me for a hike in the mountains." "All right," said Sundarananda, thinking, "if I get the chance, I'll surely run away." The mountains were full of monkeys, 500 or 600 of them. "Sundarananda," said the Buddha, "compare these monkeys with your wife. Are they more beautiful than she?" Sundarananda said, "Why, Buddha, of course Sundari is more beautiful. Monkeys are ugly. How can you compare them with Sundari?" "You're quite intelligent," said the Buddha. "You know that your wife is prettier than the monkeys." When they had returned to the Jetta Grove, the Buddha said, "Sundarananda, You have never been to the heavens. Want to go? First the mountains, now the heavens. I wonder what they're like. Sundarananda and the Buddha sat in meditation, and the Buddha used his spiritual powers to take him to the heavens, where they visited a palace, where 500 goddesses and many servants were working. The heavens were a million times more beautiful than the world of men, and Sundarananda had never seen such beautiful women. Naturally, he fell in love. "Don't you have a leader?" he asked. "Who is your master?" "Our master hasn't arrived," they said. "He's Shakyamuni Buddha's little brother, Sundarananda. He's left home to cultivate the way, and in the future he will be reborn with these 500 goddesses as his wives." Sundarananda was delighted. "I don't think I'll run away after all," he thought. "I'll cultivate diligently and get reborn in the heavens instead." "Sundarananda," said the Buddha, "are the goddesses more beautiful than Sundari, or is she more beautiful than they?" "Compared to the goddesses, Sundari is as ugly as a monkey," said Sundarananda. "Which would you prefer?" said the Buddha. "The goddesses," said Sundarananda. "Sundari is beautiful, but the goddesses are out of this world." "In the future, you'll be born here," said the Buddha. "Now let's go back and cultivate." Sundarananda meditated day and night, cultivating to be a heavenly lord. The Buddha knew that heavenly blessings have outflows, are not ultimate, and that those who enjoy them can still fall to lower realms. Wishing to wake Sundarananda up, he said, "There's nothing going on today. Would you like to visit the hells?" "I've heard that they aren't very scenic," said Sundarananda. "But if you want to take me there, I'll go." They visited the hells of the Mountain of Knives, the Sword Tree Hell, the Fire Sea Hell, the Ice Hell, and many others. Finally, they came to a hell where two ghosts were boiling a pot of oil. The lazy ghosts had let the fire go out, and the oil wasn't even simmering. "What are you two doing?" said Sundarananda. "Fooling around and going to sleep?" The two ghosts opened their eyes and stared. "What do you care?" they said. "We're in no hurry. We're waiting for someone who isn't due for a long, long time." "Who?" said Sundarananda. "Shakyamuni Buddha's little brother, Sundarananda, if you must know," they said. "He left home but seeks only the blessings of the heavens and 500 goddesses. He'll be living in the heavens for 1,000 years, but in his confusion, he will forget how to cultivate and will commit many offenses. This will create evil karma and drag him into the hells to be deep fried in this very pot." Every hair on Sundarananda's body stood straight up on end, and every pore ran with cold sweat. "How could this happen to me?" he moaned. From that moment on, he stopped cultivating for rebirth in the heavens and resolved to end birth and death. Soon he certified to arhatship. Sundarananda was extremely handsome. The Buddha had 32 marks, and Sundarananda had 30. Some people even mistook him for the Buddha. One day, Shariputra was debating with some non-Buddhists who were even more extreme than many hippies. They didn't wear any clothes at all. This is our original face, they said. Why disguise yourself by wearing clothes? Shariputra, although not very tall, was extremely intelligent. His replies left them speechless, as if they had no mouths at all. Later, when Sindarananda, who was tall and handsome, happened along, the nudists said, If that short little bhikshu beat us, how could we possibly out-talk this tall one? They bowed to Sindarananda as their teacher and left the home life. Sindarananda had a lot of faithful disciples and their cultivation was very successful. This is the story of Sindarananda who gave up his wife for the goddesses and then, fearing the hells, cultivated the way. Ananda. Ananda was the Buddha's cousin. His name means rejoicing, and was chosen because he was born on the day the Buddha awoke to the unsurpassed enlightenment. Both his birth and the Buddha's realization were causes for rejoicing. Of all of the great disciples, the Venerable Ananda was foremost in learning. He edited and compiled all the Buddha's sutras and remembered clearly, without ever forgetting, all the Dharma the Buddha spoke. Ananda's memory was extremely accurate, and his samadhi was firm. In fact, Ananda had 8 inconceivable states. 1. He never accepted special invitations. In the Sarangama Sutra, we read that because he accepted a special lunch invitation, Ananda became involved in an unfortunate encounter with Matangi's daughter. Matangi used a Brahma Heaven mantra to lure Ananda into a house of prostitution. Then the Buddha spoke the Sarangama mantra and ordered Manjushri Bodhisattva to take the mantra to rescue him. Ananda never accepted another special invitation. They're too dangerous. For a member of the Sangha to go out alone to receive offerings from Dharma-protecting laymen is called accepting special invitations and is against the Buddha's rules. If there are 10 bhikshus but a layman favors only one with an invitation, he may not go. All 10 must go. The Venerable Ananda realized his mistake and never made it again. 2. He never wore the Buddha's clothes. The bhikshus liked to wear the Buddha's old clothing. Some even fought over it, feeling that wearing the Buddha's clothes would increase their wisdom and wipe away their offenses. Actually, they were just greedy. Ananda never wore them. 3. He did not look at what he should not look at. What he was supposed to see, he looked at. What he was not supposed to see, he avoided. He did not look at what violated the code of morality, but looked only at what was in accord with it. 4. He did not give rise to defiled thoughts. The Venerable Ananda followed the Buddha to the heavens, to the palace of the Asuras, and to the palace of the dragons. He saw the heavenly women, the Asura women, and the dragon women, the most beautiful women in all creation, but he felt no sexual desire. 5. He knew which samadhi the Buddha had entered. The other bhikshus didn't know. 6. He knew the benefits received by the beings who were taught and transformed by the Buddha in samadhi. 7. He understood completely all the Dharma the Buddha spoke. 8. He never had to ask to have a Dharma repeated. He remembered it all and never needed to hear one twice. No one but Ananda had these 8 inconceivable states. Concerning not accepting special invitations, Shramaneras cannot eat or drink when they please, but must eat with the assembly. Novices and bhikshus alike cannot live with a group and yet eat separately. Even a cup of tea should be taken with a group without assuming a special style. If everyone doesn't receive an apple, an orange, or even a piece of candy, no single person is allowed to eat them on his own.